But we're continuing our Advent series, and today we're talking about joy. Joy is a bit of a hard one for me because of a simple question. And that is, do you know the difference between happiness and joy? As a kid growing up in the church, this was something that I felt like I was supposed to be able to do. That biblically, that especially in the way that I was taught in church, that there was a strong distinction between happiness and joy, and I was supposed to understand what it was. But as I looked at everyone talking about what the differences were, I was never very satisfied. I never found the definitions to be all that distinctive. And one of my pet peeves about the church family that we have is that sometimes we're kind of mean to each other. Sometimes we have somebody come in and they're in a bubble and they're excited. And they come in and say, I am so joyous. And I would hear another brother or sister come in and say, no, that's not joy, you're just happy. And it's like that bubble has just popped. And I don't want to do that to somebody. I don't want to like incorrectly tell them that their joy isn't joy, that it's happiness. But how do we tell the difference? Do we just say, well, this feels better than happiness, so it must be joy? What is joy? There's a sense that joy is something deeper. It is something greater. But if we don't understand it, then we sing songs like Joy to the World, probably the number one, maybe not anyone's favorite, but it's kind of the apple pie of Christmas songs. We all know it. We can all sing it together. Maybe not on key and maybe not at the right pace, but we can get through it together. We really don't know what we're singing if we don't know what joy is. And so I believe this morning you're going to get to benefit from my being a little bit slow on the uptake with this issue. I've wrestled with it. I've chewed on it. And I think that the birth of our Savior, this idea of Jesus coming into the world, is cornerstone to us understanding joy. And this morning, we're going to dig deep into it. We look at the story of the wise men, the Magi, as they visit Jesus after he's born. And by contrasting the wise men, the shepherds, and Mary and Joseph, and those around the manger, and the complete lack of joy that we see in Herod, I think that together we can leave today understanding what joy is and how it's distinct and different from happiness. See, joy is rooted in fulfillment, not accomplishment. They're adjacent, doesn't mean there can't be accomplishment, but it's rooted in fulfillment and alignment with our God-given purpose. We can experience something of pleasure and it can make us happy, but joy is only found there when it aligns with what God has for us. When by faith we walk in God's will and we are using this earth suit that God gave us in alignment with the instruction manual. I don't know if you've ever played golf. I'm not sure anything I've done would be considered playing golf. But I've hit golf balls on a golf course, and occasionally, rarely, I've hit them well. And there's frustration that comes with hitting it going as a slice or as a curve or it's all over the place. But if you can get lined up, and you can swing and hit that ball right where it was designed to hit on that club, the first thing that you experience is this little ping. You hear it and it resonates. And you feel just this kind of slight vibration in the shaft of the golf club. But it is very different from hitting it wrong. Everything lines up and there is this sense of, I just did what was supposed to be done, And again, for some of us, that feeling's more elusive than it might be for others. I, like Jerry, many of you have commented, don't always sing the same notes that the rest of you are singing. But occasionally, the clock, the broken clock, gets it right once or twice a day. And for those of you who are musical, there is something about the way that it feels when you, in the company of others, can sing the correct and right note. There's a resonance. It just feels like that's what was supposed to happen. There's a sense of fulfillment. Those are tangible things that we can look at, but again, when it comes to joy in Christ and joy in the Spirit of God, those concepts are true, but they're so much bigger and so much deeper. See, joy is something that we can experience together when we fulfill and are used by God to accomplish His purpose. It feels good. It feels pleasurable, but there's something deeper and more there. The problem with happiness is something called the law of diminished returns. The first time a young man grabs the hand of a pretty young woman to hold it, there will be butterflies in his stomach. And it will be the most exciting and happy thing he's ever done. But over time, holding hands isn't quite what it used to be. And he gets excited for his first kiss. And we don't need to go down that road. But you understand that there's a deeper expectation for more or for greater. First time you go in and have a perfectly cooked steak at a steakhouse, it's pleasurable, but then the server has to tell you about the dry-aged steak, the one that's cooked in butter. There's always got to be something more, something to top it, because even if you ate the most beautiful filet mignon for dinner every single night, eventually you'll say, I'm kind of bored with this. Which is interesting, because there's brothers and sisters around the world that are just excited for some beans and rice to fill their stomach. And the thing that brought us happiness the first time gets less and less exciting as we go. In contrast with joy, there is no diminished return. Every time and in every way that we are used by God, and not used the way the world uses things, we're not a Kleenex that's blown and thrown on the ground. No, when we partner with God, and partner again, probably not a fair word, because He does and brings almost everything to the table. But when God allows us to be part of building His kingdom and we join in with His will, we experience joy, and that feeling is something that we can't compare to anything else. In fact, today the story is so significant that when we read what the wise men or the magi felt, it wasn't just joy. It was this unspeakable, this amazing joy, this overwhelming joy. Let's get to our Bible passage in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, magi, we often call them wise men from the east, came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the peoples, chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. In Bethlehem, in Judea, they replied, "For this is what the prophet had written," or has written, "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to this house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. First thing I want us to explore together today is the joy of the wise men, of the Magi. As the Magi were seeking truth, and we'll get into that in a moment, God invited them into his story and led them on a long journey whose destination was worshiping Jesus. So who were the wise men? Who were the Magi? Well, they were scholars from another community, another culture. I've preached entire sermons on that we won't get into, but it was Eastern and it was what we would consider pagan religion. They were not Jewish. They were not born as God's chosen people. They were not invited into one of the tribes the way in which one of the children of Israel would have been. They were not welcome to worship in the temple. They would not have even been welcomed in the outer courts. But they were seekers of truth. And in that seeking truth, God revealed himself to them and gave them a mission of pursuit in truth to find Jesus. Think about that for a moment. How many times has someone said, as a gotcha question, "Well, what about those good people in other tribes and other places? There are miraculous stories all over the world that have been happening throughout history of Jesus revealing himself in places where the gospel was not being preached. In Muslim communities, in Hindu communities, in Eastern religious communities, whether it's Taoism or Buddhism or others, where in dreams, Jesus literally reveals himself to them. And they begin to share the gospel as they engage and find the scriptures. God is open and is seeking those who would seek the truth. And while nature is not enough to show us the good news of the gospel, the Bible tells us that even his revelation, his general revelation in nature, is enough for us to be able to begin to worship God. It's enough for us to see that there is something greater, that there is something more. And so God has invited these non-Jewish people into his story. And he's given them signs, and there are some prophetic things from their own culture that are pointing to this star for them to pursue and for them to come to find Jesus. And there is a sense here that this is not like a short-term pursuit. I don't think there's any reason for us to believe that this was something that started yesterday for them, because their journey was far and there was no Emirates Air, there was no United Airlines or Delta or even Southwest or Spirit. They were doing this on foot with camels. And they had taken and engaged on this journey as God had revealed and set the signs in motion. And now they were in Jerusalem, the political seat of power, the political seat of the Jewish people. And they asked the question, "Where is the one born King of the Jews?" They know who Jesus is. They know who this baby is. And they're seeking him. Thankfully, God thwarts Herod's plan. Thankfully, God sends them, and they're able to find Jesus. But as they do so, verse 10, when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. Then later in the verse, it says, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down, and they worshiped him. For the wise men, this being overjoyed is not a sense of accomplishment. But again, I think there's some adjacency there. I don't think these wise men are even taking credit for the fact that at the end of this journey, they were rewarded with fulfillment and completion. They were rewarded with being able to bow and worship in the flesh the God of the universe. But they'd invested. And again, I'm sure just because I've read the story of Noah, because I've seen the way Moses was treated in scriptures, that when these wise men in their hometowns maybe told a mother or a father, the scriptures don't tell us this, but I'm assuming just based on the way it's happened before, when Noah goes to build the ark, wasn't his community just so supportive? Noah, this is a great idea. Can you... Maybe we could build a couple of them. They mock and they ridicule him. Would it have been any different for these wise men that are leaving their homes, that are bringing great wealth to come worship the King of the Jews? All because they had some dreams, because they read some prophecy, because they'd looked out at the stars. I'm sure there were moments that they were like, Bill, what are we doing? As they're seeking, as they're studying, but yet God is continuing to unveil the story to them. And over all of this time and all of this pursuit and all of this faithfulness, they get to the end of the journey. And the end of the journey is bowing before Jesus to give their gifts and worship him. That sense of we've done it, we've made it, it is complete, it is fulfilled. They weren't just joyful, they were overjoyed. We too could experience this type of joy when we engage in God's plan for us and we serve faithfully year after year walking down that road. We'll experience deeper and deeper glimpses as we watch those seeds of ministry planted, those seeds of kingdom building planted, and they begin to grow and they begin to flourish as we see other people water seeds that we have been involved with planting, and yet we see even others harvest those seeds. There is a great sense of joy and fulfillment to know that you are a piece, that you are a part of God's plan, and his plan is unstoppable. That it continues and it goes. But if this was the only way we felt joy, it would be fleeting and it would be few. Because this is the type of joy that is the culmination of a long journey and sometimes even a long life. But yet it is a deep and profound way in which we experience joy. But there is another. And we see the joy to the world of Jesus being born. Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds, see, they all see that God is doing something new. They experience joy as they respond in faith and expectation. Mary was not born with a promise in hand. She didn't grow up every year being told, Mary, one day you will bear the God of the universe in your womb. It'd be a lot of pressure to put on somebody. And while they were experiencing this for a time, we have to believe that, I'm assuming Jesus was something close to a full-term pregnancy, but we didn't get all the medical details. We don't have his weight and height and head circumference and all of the things that we track today. But we know he was healthy and we know he survived. So for Mary and Joseph, this journey that they have been on has been maybe about 9 months, but I don't even know if Mary was told like the first day of conception or if she was told a few months in. Many of you know, because we live in a world fraught with peril and miscarriages happen, oftentimes we don't learn of someone we care about's pregnancy until it's months in. So it may have been only 6 months that Mary knew that this was happening. My point is, this is different from what the wise men experienced. It's not this long journey that's finally coming to fulfillment and completion. It's not just this long pathway of prophecy. And there is much of that in the birth of Jesus. One of the things that we all get to be excited about is that the promise of Jesus, it's been foretold over and over, and the people of Jerusalem, for them, there was a great longing that was being fulfilled if they understood and would believe it. But for Mary and for Joseph and for the shepherds, this was all something that was unfolding before them live. It was happening before their eyes. And they got to experience joy in that very moment, unexpected joy, by simply saying yes to God, by simply believing and walking in expectation with it. And I'm glad for this type of joy, because otherwise life would be hard and lacking joy for long periods of time. But here, we get everyday moments and glimpses into what God's doing, where we realize God invites us in to a moment with Him to see what He's doing. And those things may have been in the works for so long, but all we have to do is allow our hands and our feet to be used in that moment as a vessel for God's power and His Spirit. Told you the story a few weeks ago of the Christian writer, Beth Moore, who was on the airplane, and she got off the airplane and had that feeling that she was supposed to brush this man's hair. This was not something God prepared her for 2 weeks prior. It was a momentary thing that she was able to be God's hands and feet to him there by brushing his hair and doing a very unexpected thing. If we allow him, God will use us in ways that don't make sense, in ways that are unexpected, but there will be great joy there because we become instruments of God's power. And in many ways, we become that golf club that had the perfect shot. It will just feel right, and there will be great joy. Mary and Joseph, they weren't in the driver's seat. They were simply responding, "Yes, God." Luke chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. And this isn't exactly to the story of the Magi, but it's in response to the shepherds and all of this commotion. Luke tells the story from a different perspective and a different angle, but it's the same birth of Jesus. "But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told." We've seen so many Christmas pageants, at least some of us have, that sometimes I think we misunderstand what shepherds were. We think of shepherds as these little boys, kind of cherub-like, fat little cheeks, cute little outfits, watching the, I don't know what's so funny, but I'll learn later, watching the sheep out away from town. But shepherds were rough. They didn't shower for a long time. They were a little crusty. They were wheelers and dealers. You got to realize sheep were money. That was their value. They weren't sitting on gold bars or real estate. Not when you're nomadic, not when you're moving around. The flock was the money. And these were the guys that were wheeling and dealing, that were making the money. These were not your gentle, silent, strong types. These were your salt of the earth folks. And they experience Jesus, and they see the angel, and they come to Jesus, and what do? They return glorifying and praising God. They realize what it meant to be invited to that moment and being used by God in that moment. And so whether it's a long-term building, a long journey with God where we see these instrumental and huge mile markers, we can experience overwhelming joy in that. But it can also be things that would have been very mundane and simple. But yet, because God showed up, because God chose to use us, because we said yes, they become filled with tremendous joy. There are times that God has called me to give away a significant amount of money that I had earmarked for something else. And I'm not bragging, because I complained a little and I questioned God a lot. And maybe some of the time I was faithful. But when I have been, it's amazing. The feeling of warmth and joy as we obey and we become part of God's plan and we see fulfillment and completion as we are used by God. So we see the joy of the Magi and the wise men, and we see the joy to the world of Mary and Joseph and the shepherds, and put dot, 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 because there's so many others there. There was great joy to some of those that were in the temple that heard that the wise men were saying the promise, the Messiah, is to be born. And while we'll learn not everyone was excited in Jerusalem, I'm sure there were a few that were like, yeah, it's happening. The Simeons, the Annas. But there's caution here too. And I struggled with what to put here for Herod, but I think in the end, the death of Herod is the most accurate. God's will was in conflict with Herod's. And despite having a front row or front row seat to history, he had no joy. And it cost him his life. Verse 3, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. That's a pretty deep statement. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law. So we alluded to this a little bit with peace last week, but Herod is something special, something different in the world. See, Herod isn't really a king. He's more of a governor, because Herod answers to Rome, but he is in a particularly cushy position. Herod has one job, and it's to keep things from getting out of control in Jerusalem. But you've heard the expression, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Herod had none of that weight. Herod didn't have to go to war. Herod simply had to send a letter to Rome, and a legion of troops came in, and his job was to send that letter before things became a problem. So if a rebellion was cooking, Herod had to send a letter, and there was an inflowing of troops, and there was a lot of cracked heads and beatings and deaths. But Herod didn't have to do any of that. Herod's job was to sit there as a figurehead and was to eat the best food and was to have many, many concubines. He was a salacious and a lusty man. He wasn't a good guy. But he had no fear because Rome, the biggest superpower at the time that had ever been on earth, had brought the Roman peace. And everyone knew Herod sent a messenger with a letter, and there was death and there was destruction and there was no more rebellion. And Herod had an interesting relationship in how he kept the peace. He brought in the Jewish leaders. This is the Sanhedrin or the Jewish court. And you have the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the leaders of the people. And he said to them, hey, I can't really handle, and life will get really bad for you because I'm going to go after your family if there's rebellion. But I'm going to give you wealth like you'll never be able to imagine. And I'm going to give you the best food, and I'm going to make your people serve you and not you serve your people. At a time in Israel's history, the Levitical system, the priests, the Sadducees and the Pharisees now, they had it like no other generation before them. They got to live high on the hog. Life was sweet. All they had to do was go through the motions. And Herod had it good, because before, if you were the king, especially in the ancient Near East, there were other kingdoms at every moment that were there for your head. David was strong, and he had a strong kingdom, and Solomon was strong, but there were always nations that were ready to come to war with them. And they were at war over and over. And war is expensive. So your people aren't eating well. I mean, it's hard. It's a lot to wrestle. And the expectation in these ancient Near Eastern kingdoms was when you went to war, the king went right with you. In fact, that was what was so weird about Bathsheba's story. When David sees Bathsheba on the rooftop, the Bible makes it very clear over and over again that David was supposed to be leading his men in battle. And instead, he was where he wasn't supposed to be. And that's when his eyes gazed upon that lustful moment. Herod doesn't have to go to war. He has to send a letter. And now Herod is hearing news that there is one born king of the Jews. And I'm sure to his credit, there was fear that he might lose his life if this thing took off, because he's the king of the Jews. And he's the king of the Jews because that's the job that Caesar and Rome has given him. And if he messes this up, that was his one job. He will be replaced. And Caesar didn't do that through like an unemployment line. He would have had his life taken. So he's in this place of great privilege. The only thing he has to do is not mess it up. And here God's plans come in and conflict with his, but not just his. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. Now, part of that, I think, means that there was a fervor for those who would hear, that there were some who were disturbed or were shaken out of complacency because the promise was about to be fulfilled. But get me not, Jerusalem was a lot like Washington, D.C. There's a lot of bureaucracy right now, and there are a lot of people who are saying, man, the gravy train might end. It's one of the reasons that these men later crucified Jesus. But Herod's plans, they differed from God's plans. And Herod didn't act in faith, he acted in fear. And he lied and he cheated, and he ultimately, being tricked by the Magi when they didn't return, went and killed so many young children trying to stop the prophecy, trying to put an end to what God was doing. And not only did God protect his son Jesus, but he took Herod's life. Herod, who was in a place where he was untouchable, where he was protected, God took his life in his 60s. And I know we've all eaten and drank coffee, so I'll try not to be too weird about this. But in his 60s, Herod died, and science has actually studied this, and they've been able, there's enough evidence out there. So again, Herod was a real person. I think it's a good reminder for that, because we hear these stories and it seems so far away that it's like the Lord of the Rings or any other type of fiction, but it's not, it's real. And they've studied this. They know that Herod died, at least the evidence shows, of not just kidney failure, but he had gangrene in the genitals from his genitals being overrun and eaten by maggots. I mean, that's some way to go. And it was rare because it didn't happen very often. God's not mean. But sometimes he puts an exclamation point down. I don't know if Herod ever experienced joy. And the sad thing was, he was invited into joy. He was invited into the story with a front row seat. But because he couldn't align his desires and his will with God's will, he died a painful and disgusting death. I don't want you to critique whether somebody's happy or joyful, but internally, I want you to be able to experience the joy that only comes from embracing the will and the plans of God. If you are fighting it, if you are struggling against it, if you are beating your hair against the wind, you will never experience joy. You can only experience joy when you're used in such a beautiful way by the God of all creation. When you say, "Yes, Lord," and you will experience joy like the Magi did, when that journey is long and it goes year after year, and years become decades, and a decade becomes something close to a century. And one day you'll get to stand before Jesus in heaven and hear the words of the Father, "Well done, good and faithful servant." I can only imagine how overwhelming and how overjoyed that moment will be. But until then, there will be mile markers and there will be moments of fulfillment and completion. And again, don't hear me wrong. It's not about what we have done. It's not, "Oh, look at my accomplishments." It's that we see the story unfold and the narrative move forward. We see the highlights and those chilling moments in God's story, and we know we were a part of it, and we experience joy. But as you walk out that door today, God will provide opportunities, whether it's the waiter or waitress at your restaurant, whether it's the person checking you out at Walmart or Kroger. And if you're a service worker, this is not the most fun time of year. I was just out. I will do anything I can not to go shopping. I don't like shopping. A, I don't like spending money. And B, I'm not sure I like people that much. I love all of you, but I have a hard time, and I might be somewhat broken in public. It's just so many people right now. They're everywhere. Don't they have homes? So I'm thankful that I have a wife and daughters that like to shop more than I do. But when you're out there, I just the other day I was out in the store, that's what I was trying to say, and I saw a young woman just berate the person at the register. And you're like, "Merry Christmas." And we all can have that moment. But as you walk out that door, wherever you go, will you be open to what God's doing? Will you pray and say, "God, how can you use me? And we will see God take situations that we thought would be tense, that we thought would be difficult, and he will use us to bring an air of lightness and love and grace and mercy and peace and gentleness and self-control into those moments. And then so God shows up and there will be joy. Will you embrace God's will and experience his joy? If you run away from God, if you run away from his will, you may get to experience moments of happiness, but remember, the law of diminished returns. The next time you do that thing, it may not feel as happy or as pleasurable as it did the last. But if you embrace God's will, if you stop fighting, if you say, yes, Lord, even if it's sending me to Africa, I will go where you want me to go, and I will do what you want me to do, and I will say what you want me to say, you will experience joy that will never have an end. Joy that will stay with you. Joy that you won't understand. But it will bubble out and it will be contagious. And around the Christmas table, it will be what your friends and family want to ask you about because they want to experience what you have if you are filled with joy. So Jesus' birth, his story, I mean, it's such a major milestone in his story that so many people had waited so many years for, but it also brought reconciliation with us and God so that we can experience joy at any moment, at any time, as we partner with his plan, as we experience his will, as we are filled with his Spirit. Ella, would you help us continue in worship?